Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 592, The Untold Story of Halo, Transfer of Power, Persistent Support, recorded live on August 15th, 2017. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are tackling the final part in this untold story of Halo posted over on Vice. We've been through the first two parts. They were quite lengthy. And we are finally wrapping up the entirety of this article. So we're going to be covering the transition from Bungie to 343 of the Halo franchise in this part, leading up to where we are now in the Halo franchise as far as the game development side is. But we have a couple of news things that we're going to hit on before we jump into the article and wrap things up. We have another community update that we're going to kind of breeze through quickly so we can get to the remaining of the article. So the first thing is we have a content update coming for Halo Wars 2. This will be the last content update, I believe, as part of the season pass before we get Awakening the Nightmare as its own separate DLC, which is going to be coming in September. But we're going to have Yap Yap the Destroyer be our next leader in Halo Wars 2. We have a little bit of a glimpse of some of the units that we'll actually see in Halo Wars 2 from Halo 5 Warzone. The Grunt Goblin will be making a return in Halo Wars 2. And then there's a couple other specific unit types that's going to be specifically for Halo Wars 2, such as the Brute Rider, which is a grunt just rides a brute, which kind of looks a little cute, actually. Then there's the Heavy Grunt, that's the fuel rod grunts, basically. And then a Grunt Swarm, which is just a spirit dropship with a whole bunch of grunts.
Don't forget the methane wagon.
Oh, yep. Sorry, I skipped that one. And then the methane wagon, which is a souped up... what's that vehicle called?
Chopper?
Chopper, thank you. Yes.
With an extra set of wheels.
Yeah, it's got two wheels. Well, I guess technically four. Because one wheel was got two.
Yeah, four wheels.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that and I'm like, I don't think I want to be on the receiving end of that thing.
No, and then it's got fumes of methane pouring out the back as well.
I wonder if you hit one of them tanks if it explodes.
That would be really funny. I hope it does.
Yay! Oh.
They really need a grunt birthday party skull for Halo Wars 2 multiplayer with this leader power. Or not leader power, but with this leader.
I think if you play this leader, it should automatically turn on.
Yes. That would be quite the sight to see. And York is saying in the chat that Yap Yap was the grunt that was mentioned in the Flood Halo book. Not sure if that's right, but someone else wants to...
Yeah, I think so.
So there are a few grunt names that are like very similar to that or whatever.
That does sound right. I'd have to go look through the book to find out for sure, but...
And Eric Ibu is correcting us, and it says the vehicle is Shadow, but it basically looks like a chopper. Technicalities, Eric Ibu. It looks like a chopper.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a Shadow before, other than my own.
Yeah. So that's going to be the leader that we're going to get in the next content update for Halo Wars 2, which I'm guessing will be dropping next week, if not the week after. So sometime before PAX comes around.
Oh, okay. Yap is the one in the book.
Okay, so it's not the same. Not
Yap Yap. Close, but not quite.
Cool.
Thank you, Eric Yabu.
We got a lot of lore nerds on this.
And Fudge.
In our chat. Specifically Fudge. He's the big one. So we have some weapon tuning updates coming to Halo 5 multiplayer. The active camo is going to get tweaked. It's going to get buffed a little bit. Hasn't been as effective as has been desired, and it probably hasn't been used as much. So they're going to be buffing that. The energy sword is going to get a little bit of a little reduction of speed boost, sorry. And then the beam rifle has been, they deem, too effective when firing from the hip, so they're going to be nerfing that a little bit as well.
Well, I got to say, the beam rifle has always been good firing from the hip.
Beam rifle is probably the best.
Even when they first, when they introduced the weapon, that was, that was just a thing with it. It was always better at firing from the hip than, compared to the other sniper rifles.
Yeah. I think the Halo 2 beam rifles were actually not quite as effective as just the regular beam rifle in Halo 5.
No, the Halo 2 beam rifles were more effective at firing from the hip.
Oh, really? I thought they were always a little bit more difficult.
They were easy. I'm not saying they were...
Than the base one.
That they weren't more difficult, but they were still a lot easier to fire from the hip than they were than the human sniper rifles.
Yes, very much so.
Because with the beam rifle, you do have some, a partial reticle. So you have some reference.
So those changes are going to be coming to the Halo 5 sandbox. And of course, they're going to be always tweaking the sandbox with community input and stats that you're getting back. They had a little blurb in here about the Waypoint Store tournaments that they started. We talked about that a little bit last week. I still need to see if we can get Kenny on the show. Maybe I can interview a mom out in Seattle for PAX. But there are two more tournaments coming up, which they have planned. One that's going to be September 3rd, which is the weekend of PAX. And then there's another one the first weekend in October. And if you go to aka.ms/msstorehaloregister, you can register for your local tournament. They're at Microsoft stores all around the world. I think every Microsoft store probably has a tournament. I'd be surprised if there was any that did not. So head on over there, check it out, register for a tournament for your local Microsoft store, and go have some fun. Go meet some new Halo people. They are tweaking infection a little bit more as well. They're working on some fine tunings that the community has provided feedback on, and some stuff that they want to patch up and make the infection experience a little bit better. So there's going to be some changes that they have documented over on the forums that they'll wrap up into an update in a little bit. Also, the Halo 2 BR playlist was the feature playlist for this past weekend. It was also a double XP weekend. So if you got in your chance to get some double XP, then good job for you. I knew Uni was playing with a few people, I think Erkibu as well, trying to get up to his 152. So he still has quite a ways to go, but there is a lot more way for me to go.
Mm-hmm.
Long way. Warzone Turbo has returned. And as Godzilla was telling me before the podcast, if you were with us on Friday, the Podtacular crew went and played some Warzone Turbo for Fraggin' Fridays. How was the fun on Friday?
Oh, it was fun after we quit playing Warzone Turbo.
They should just keep it. Warzone Turbo is so much fun.
We went in there. We had fun. We won two games, I think it was, and the third game we lost, or something like that. But anyway, no, we had a lot of fun. We were going in there just basically hunting Spartan kills. I burned up the last of my Norfangs. And going back to the invisibility thing, that's about the only time I use them is in Warzone Turbo.
I hardly use the power-ups. There's a few times I'll use them, like if I was playing regular Warzone and it was trying to get into a core, I'll use camo to sneak in, or I'll use overshield sometimes.
Yeah, I don't. In regular Warzone, I just don't use them. I'd much rather pull a more powerful weapon than use a boost.
There is some back compat news, as in it's still being worked on. There's no availability projection yet for when it's going to be coming, but it's still being worked on. And they said that they're aware that the Noble Map Pack is still not listed as free, so they're still working on getting that fixed. They're going to be taking Awakening of the Nightmare to Gamescom, which is going to be taking place August 22nd to 26th. Terminus Firefight will be playable there on the show floor. So if you are one of our European listeners, then if you're going to Gamescom, you'll have the chance to try out some Terminus Firefight. There is going to be some more matchmaking updates. Josh Minky has his threads that he's been throwing up on the Waypoint forum, so go check that out. And then we're a little late on this, but it's because we record on Tuesdays. They had a community play date on Monday, which was yesterday, that they jumped into the Halo 2 BR Slayer playlist and handing out some more 343 Ice Unicorn skins.
Woo!
Then we got a few other videos that they threw up here on the bottom. There is a community spotlight video. There is also a montage video for, I don't know what if this is for something. Oh, 5,000 subs for, I guess, the YouTube channel Tripal. And then there's a few other screenshots on here, which I kind of like the first one and the third one on here.
Yeah, me too.
The last one, especially, just because of the contrasting color.
It's amazing what they do with filters nowadays.
I don't even know if that's a filter. Well, maybe on the back, because I bet you... Well, no, you might be right. Never mind, because the sniper rifle would have color on it in certain spots. So, yeah, you're right. Never mind. I retract my statement. Yeah, there's lots of cool screenshots out there. That was the quick roundup for the update. So let's go ahead and jump into our main topic of the evening, which is part 3 of the untold story of Halo. If you want to follow along with us, I'll go ahead and put the link in the chat for those of you that are listening to us live on either Twitch or Mixer. For those of you coming out, thanks for coming over and supporting us live. For those of you listening to us after the fact, you can find us over on Twitch and Mixer at Podtacular Channels, and we record on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. All right. Starting off with the independence of Bungie right before the shipment of Halo 3, we go into the transition of power of the Halo franchise from Bungie to 343 Industries, with Bungie wrapping up their final commitment to Microsoft, which would be Halo Reach. Now, reading through this, it's not surprising some of the challenges going on with the handover from Microsoft to for the Halo franchise, and then Bungie was kind of fully on board with moving in the route of Destiny. But I was particularly interested in, and I know I'm kind of jumping ahead here a little bit, just the tone of voice between the Bungie people and the 343 people.
Yeah, I can understand the feelings, because, I mean, you know, Halo is their baby, even though they don't own it. So, you know, I can understand not wanting to let go of it, but they didn't want to make any more Halo games. So, get over it! Anyway, yeah, you know, I understand what you're saying. It seems like the transition could have gone better. There were a lot of people that they were harboring some pretty bad feelings when it came to the changing of the guard, as I want to say, at least.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, I did notice that in this particular section, Jamie Gismer, is that his last name?
Griesmer.
He got, it just kind of sounded like he got a little whiny towards the end, you know, as far as the statements they posted in this article.
So I was kind of surprised, because I thought when Jamie was pretty much done with helping out with ODST, I thought he was pretty much in on the Infamous team. I didn't know that he was still, I guess, consulting to get Reach done. And then when 343 finally took over, that a lot of the developers or the creative team were still reaching out to Jamie to double check their, well, not necessarily double check their work, but make sure that they're holding true to what they envisioned Halo and if they were doing the right thing. I wasn't aware that Jamie still had, was kind of tied to Halo at this, to this great extent, even through the time that 343 has been exclusively managing it.
Yeah, the one thing that amazes me is how much Marty was involved in the game.
I know that too.
I mean, people note that, know his music, and they think that's all he did, and that's not all he did. You know, he was involved in the development of the stories of the games, and that's that really floored me. I mean, his concept for Reach was the Titanic. Everybody knows the Titanic sinks at the end, but they wanted to tell that type of story. You know, they wanted to tell a story that everybody already knew the ending to, but were hoping that they could change it type deal. And, you know, which, you know, Reach, that's pretty much the development of the story. I mean, you know, that is the story of Reach. It falls. I just, it floored me with how much he was actually involved in the development of Reach and the building of the story and the characters, and it just really surprised me.
Yeah, even like since Halo 3, Marty has been playing a pretty big role as far as the story.
I have to admit that at least by Reach, it seemed like, well, ODST into Reach, because that's the kind of era we're covering right at the moment. It seems like Bungie had kind of got their act together.
Yes.
And they were really in the business of producing games. Where before, you know, it's kind of like, you know, a bunch of buddies get together and want to do something, and then they never can agree what they want to do. So, you know, I like to, it, throughout the article, you can kind of see Bungie maturing as a company. And becoming more focused on things. I really am sad that, you know, throughout this entire article, they keep talking about how burned out they are on making Halo games. And, you know, that's, in my opinion, that, you know, that's just sad to hear because, you know, they did such a great job with the games that they did, even though after reading this article, I realize how much of a challenge it was to create, especially the first two games. You know, Halo 3 wasn't as much of a crunch, but it was still pretty, you know, it was still a pretty good crunch compared to what they did with ODST and Halo Reach, which, you know, they developed those games, but ODST was developed inside of a year, ready to ship, and, you know, Reach was being developed alongside it. So it, you know, it's just really amazing how, you know, how well and how organized they got towards the end. I just wish they could have put the heart that they put in Halo into their following game.
And you could actually see in our, because a lot of people probably know of the, or get the sense that this was Bungie's last Halo game. They weren't quite that into it as they were for the first three Halo games, and this article kind of proves that, where there was a lot of things that they had ideas for and they were trying to do, but the drive just wasn't there, and the studio was kind of split between Destiny and Reach. And I forget who said this in the article, but it was even to the point where on the Reach project, as soon as one team was done with their part of the project, they moved out of the Kirkland office to the Bellevue office, which was where Bungie was relocating. And 343 was coming over, coming in to take over the Kirkland office.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a sign of I'm done with this game, this franchise. That's kind of it.
Yeah. It's, it just, I think what I'm trying to get at is, it seems like Bungie went from wanting to develop a good, high-quality story game, which, when you read this article, you're like, huh? how the heck did Halo become such a cult hit? Who knows? Because the way Halo CE was developed, there is honestly no reason for the game to do as well as it did.
Yeah, it was a stroke of luck.
Because it was not, everybody knows it's not what it started out being. It went through so many rewrites in its production, and to have this game to be such a huge hit with the chaos that was Bungie developing this game, and to have that chaos continue into the second iteration of the game, probably even more so in the second iteration of the game, and it's beloved by everybody.
Yeah.
Well, most everybody.
Everyone always liked the previous version or the original for their own reasons.
I mean, I like the original Halo CE because of the story that's in the game. You know, the gameplay mechanics are wonky as all get out. There is a high learning curve if you're coming into shooters, even in campaign. But, you know, that's the hook that got me in, is that story. You know, ODST is, you know, right there in second. That is my second favorite story. And because it was very well told. The first, you know, the Halo CE, you know, you can probably call it nostalgia. I don't know, but that is my favorite game. But it's not my favorite game to play. I actually enjoy playing Halo 5. In Halo CE, when we do LAN parties or we all get together and go on Xbox, or, you know, just play on one Xbox, it was all well and good, but I never really enjoyed that time. I enjoyed being with my friends and playing the video game. That was fun because, you know, you could sit there and, you know, you could razz each other and call each other idiots and why'd you hide there?
I saw
you
go,
you know, all that stuff.
Like I'm square in the face.
You know, that was fun, but the actual playing the game in a multiplayer setup was very frustrating for me, and it still is. But not as frustrating as it used to be, but it's still very frustrating for me just because of the wonky physics of Halo CE. But, you know, it's just, you know, they went from that being that studio to being this money focused studio. And I'm not saying a game studio doesn't need to focus on the dollars coming in, because that's how you stay alive. But it's like they went from one extreme to the other.
There's a lot of focus on, let's make a game that we really want to make and that we really enjoy and that we know that our fans will enjoy, to, oh, Activision is telling us we have to make money. Well, cash cow, microtransactions, let's rip out the story.
Yeah, well, the deal is, if you know, honestly, if Activision would have let Bungie build the game the way they build games, and let them tell the story the way they tell story, which they're very good at telling story, the game would have been so much more of a success. Because once the word got out of how crappy the story was of Destiny, people quit buying it. You know, the only reason I kept up with it is I'd wait for stuff to go on sale. You know, where I'm buying it at, you know, a quarter of what the retail price was. But anyway, back to the article. One thing I got reminded about was 777. You know, just over the years, I'd forgotten what significance that date was. You know, that's the date that Bungie got their freedom from Microsoft, which is cool.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, you're right.
One comment that really stood out to me was when Frank O'Connor is talking about leaving Bungie and going to 343. He went in and he met with Bonnie Ross, and he's thinking he's going into this meeting talking to a marketing person that has no idea what the game's about. After that meeting, Frank was hooked. you know, he was part of 343 because Bonnie really does care for the universe. She understands the universe. She wants to expand the universe. You know, and Frank very plainly says if he hadn't have met Bonnie Ross in that meeting, he would still be at Bungie. And then you've got Marty on the total opposite end of that is that, you know, he never even considered going to 343 because they're the competition.
This is just kind of the night and day scenario of Frankie just really loved the Halo franchise and stuck with it. And Marty was kind of just, and not to put this in negative connotations on either side, but just kind of the sticking with the family, with Bungie.
Well, you know, Marty, I don't want to say Marty's not a Halo person because he is, but he's loyal to Bungie because, you know, that's kind of where he made his name. And, you know, Marty had been there since the beginning of Halo. So, you know, he's been with the company for several years where, you know, Frankie, he came in, middle to the end of Halo 2. Don't get me wrong, he'd been there for a while, but, you know, Marty's been there since the beginning, hence Marty the Elder.
And then Marty tried to convince Frankie to stay with Bungie.
Yeah, he wanted Frank to stay. And Frank was basically says, you know, basically told Marty, I love Halo and I want to stay with Halo. And that means I go to 343. There was you know, they talk about the changing of the guard, about controlling the IP as far as, you know, the getting the information off Bungie.net over on the Microsoft stuff. So, you know, the early Waypoint, or what was it? What was it before Waypoint? It was something else.
I thought it was Waypoint.
I thought they had a predecessor to that. Maybe they didn't. It's gone through so many iterations, it's not the same Waypoint as it was when it launched.
No, it's very different. I thought it was Waypoint because there's the 360 Halo Waypoint app. And I thought that's where everything resided.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe it's between Waypoint, the Halo channel, and then the new, whatever it is, the Halo app that's getting me confused.
Possibly. But yeah, Frank said in here that he knew that Destiny wasn't going to be his thing because it was going to be more RPG-based, and he doesn't want to grind and that kind of stuff, which is one of the reasons why I didn't stay with Destiny either. For him, that was the right fit. And then 343 eventually reached out to Max and Certain Affinity to do more DLC for Halo Reach, do Halo CE Anniversary, and then they helped out with the Master Chief Collection and Halo 4 DLC. So even though the new studio really didn't have too many, I guess, former Halo developers on there, 343 was at least smart enough to utilize some of the resources that were currently or had in the past worked on the Halo franchise before, that at least try to make the new studio successful in taking on their own realm of what they would eventually make their own Halo franchise or start morphing it in that direction.
I mean, you know, a lot of the things that showed up in Halo 4 were, you know, basically ideas that Bungie had left on the cutting room floor. You know, they were trying to make a transitional game, bring up some of the stuff that Bungie had left out of games due to lack of time or lack of polish on the item. They were following Bungie's lead with the Spartan abilities or the armor mods. So, you know, it's, you know, they were following that direction. They really didn't get to truly express themselves in Halo 4. They did a really good job with telling a really good story, but, you know, they dropped the ball on the multiplayer. And by the time they'd gotten things where everybody closer to what everybody wanted, they'd already lost the audience. And, you know, they do mention that in here. They admit that they screwed up on the multiplayer stuff. You know, they took it too far away from the classic Halo. And I think, you know, with Halo 5, yes, it is not classic Halo, but it's, to me, it still has that feel. You have, you know, the additional mobility in Halo 5 doesn't detract from the gameplay experience.
I think Halo 5 did a lot better job of bringing it back in that way, but as the article kind of hints at, they kind of missed the ball with it on Halo 4. And Frankie attests to it, and we know about it just from stats, but the population for matchmaking did not stay with Halo 4. It dropped quicker than it did for Reach. I think it was within 2 or 3 months, the population was below that of Reach for Halo 4.
And even faster than that, below the population of Halo 3.
Yeah, which that's kind of bad. But at the same time, they discuss in here, and they kind of admit to trying to do too much with the first game. And Ryan Payton, who I don't think we've actually seen too much publicly. I think we saw a little bit of him during Halo 4's development, but he had these big ideas and some kind of groundbreaking ideas to really change up the Halo's scape. And they eventually, he was brought on as the creative director, and this really sucked, and I feel really bad for him, but he got knocked down from creative director to, was it narrative director? And a lot of the other people that were in here, I think Frankie and I forget who else was commenting on it, but just the ideas that Ryan was coming up with were just such a shakeup and so different to Halo. And while some of the stuff was prototyped out and playable, it just didn't end up fitting.
Yeah.
But some of it came back into Halo 5.
If they would have put out the game that Ryan wanted for Halo 4, there would have been a major, major uproar. Don't get me wrong, there was a lot of people complaining about Halo 4 and the multiplayer, but the way they talk about, you know, they don't actually mention any of his ideas, but the way they describe what he wanted to do with Halo, it wasn't going to be a Halo game. It was going to be something else. And I mean, it turns out later on, he winds up working on Metal Gear, I think it was, wasn't it?
Well, that was before he came to work on Halo.
Or no, he went to work on, he left 343 and started working on something else. What was it?
He started his own company called Camouflage, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm trying to look for the game. I forget what it was called. Republic.
Which, you know, a lot of the ideas he had for Halo, he put into that game. Granted, I'd never played the game, so I couldn't tell you if it was a good or bad game, but.
And another thing, too, is after he said he left Halo, he said if he had a chance to do it again, as being a new studio, he would have just completely remastered Halo 1 from the ground up and make that be the first game for the studio to really show that they can do or handle the franchise right. And I know they looked at doing CE Anniversary, which was basically just a texture upgrade. So I don't know if that would have been the best thing to do, just like to completely remake a game.
Well, I think it would have been a good way for a new studio to cut their teeth.
Or at least do that instead of doing CE Anniversary and just like do CE Remastered. And update some of the movement mechanics and the vehicles to be destructive and be a little bit more kind of like almost kind of like what SPV3 has done in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, go through the game. Don't change the story because, you know, it's a classic story. But, you know, update the physics of the game, update the visuals of the game.
Add some levels from the books. Bonus content.
You know, reimagine some level. Yeah, bonus content. Develop a matchmaking system for it and put that game out there. Let everybody gel and, you know, get to be, used to working with each other, because, you know, like, you know, they say in here that, you know, in Halo 4 they were a brand new team and they were trying to do all this stuff, but they weren't really communicating back and forth that well. Hence a lot of the things that got, that went into the game that, you know, a lot of people didn't like. Ordnance. You know, I think it would probably have been better if they'd have done a remake game first, just to get the team together and get them all working on the same page. I don't know how it would have been received, but I think it probably would have been received a lot better than Halo 4 was.
It's hard to say.
And that would have also, you know, on the multiplayer side, that would have also gave them a platform that they could test some of their new ideas.
That's true. And one of the things that I think it was either Josh or Frank mentioned about changes that they made to multiplayer and how they lost a lot of fan base early on because of the traditional example that they had, which was more symmetrical maps for 4v4 gameplay, they did not adopt, which made the multiplayer in Halo 4 really drop really quickly. It wasn't fun to play.
Yeah, they focused too much on the asymmetrical map types. Well, one reason Haven is so popular is because it's a symmetrical map. Same with Mammoth. It's a symmetrical map. It's the same on both sides. And it's a really small map, too, but which makes it really good for 4v4.
One of the things that Jamie mentions in here, too, is that with Halo 4, he didn't think that the team was really that confident enough to take their own direction. They were looking back into what tried to make Halo successful, and he pointed out that it's that kind of success, you just can't bottle it up and redo it again. That was one done thing. You have to move forward. And he was saying Halo 5 was a better game because instead of trying to remake a success that original Halos were, they picked a direction with Halo 5 and then they pushed forward with that. I mean, to me, it's significantly close to night and day between Halo 4 and Halo 5 as far as multiplayer.
Oh, yeah. You can't clone a previous game and have it really be successful. As much as the public says they want that, they don't. The people crying and whining about the way multiplayer works today, you know, they want that old gameplay, but you can't do that and be successful because that audience is getting older. The target market for Halo is not 30 to 45 years old.
It's like you want fresh people, you want new players, you want more people playing your game, and you want people to keep playing your game.
Yeah, your target demographic for, you know, this type of game is, you know, that 12 to 20 year old. And that's, you know, that's where a lot of games, their demographic is targeted. You know, because those are the people that have an abundance of time to play video games. You know, you get a 25-year-old, yeah, they still got time to play video games, but they still have, you know, a life. You know, they have to hold down a job. They have to take, you know, they have responsibilities, which cuts into that.
There's life.
Yeah, you know, as we say, life gets in the way, and it does.
That's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, we can't all be Irikibu and play 18 hours a day and get our 152 and then not do anything. But, you know, it's just, you know, I still haven't made Inheritor on Reach. And, you know, I would love to put the time in.
Me too.
Yeah, no. I think to make Inheritor, I still have to do like 30 million XP. Or credits or something like that.
I don't know how far away I am.
I'd have to actually add it up again, but yeah.
So jumping from Halo 4 to the Master Chief Collection, this is really where, I mean, we saw a lot of involvement from Max Hoberman from basically the press tour that he did with all the conventions and getting a lot of that public spotlight. And there was a lot of hype up for the game, but then on launch, Everyone knows about the epic freakout that happened with when it launched. Stuff wasn't working.
Crash and burn.
And apparently stuff that was happening in the real world, they didn't actually see in tests, which I think I vaguely remember hearing something like that, where about what they were experiencing on in the live environment did not match up with what they were doing in testing. And to me, that's like, well, how does that happen in the first place?
Yeah, there was something very inherently wrong with their testing policies. And granted, they are testing in a much smaller scale than a live game, a published live game. They're testing with a few thousand people. When a game like that hits the market, all of a sudden you have hundreds of thousands of people hitting those servers.
Even still, though,
they should have done a much better job of what they did. And I don't know what they did in their testing environment to skew the results so badly.
You haven't seen past Halo games suffer this bad. Granted, Master Chief Collection is 4 Halo games in one, but at the same time.
Well, yeah, the online portion of the Master Chief's Collection is 8 times more complicated than it is in any other Halo game. Just by the fact that they're trying to make one place for all games. One matchmaking system for all the games.
And then eventually Halo 5 was supposed to be brought into that universal UI.
Yeah.
Which I'm thankful that they didn't.
I'm really glad that they decided to make that a standalone. In hindsight, if they wanted to do the Master Chief Collection, they really should have done 4 separate games. I understand why they did the Master Chief Collection, and it's a really cool idea, but it's a really ambitious project. They should have been working on that the day after they started Halo 4 or finished Halo 4. And, they should have maintained a lot more control over what happened with the programming for the game. There were a lot of mistakes made, and, the nice thing is now they're kind of admitting up to it, and the game is pretty stable now.
Yeah, there's some people that cry, cry wolf a lot. But compared to what it was at launch, it's a lot better.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot better than what it was at launch. Now, I still fire it up from time to time, and I occasionally have bugs in matchmaking, but nothing like it used to be.
Anyways, moving on. One of the other things I noticed in here, too, because we actually see a lot of separation of duty, I think, with how 343 set things up. And I almost think that's kind of maybe an indication as to why, well, in addition to a lot of other key things, but a potential reason why the Bungie Halo games are so different from the 343 games, other than the fact that they're done by completely different studios and different leadership. But the fact that in Bungie, you saw people's hairs on fire and you didn't have that clear distinction of duties because everyone was involved in everything. But with 343, you see a lot of separation of duty. Frankie has his franchise developer role. You had Josh, who was the creative side of things, and then Tim Longo got brought in to do the multiplayer side specifically for Halo 5, and Josh went over to the creative and more of the campaign side of things. And then Den Ayub had his own areas of making sure everything worked with kind of the, I guess, non-primary projects like the Master Chief Collection and Halo CE Anniversary and all that stuff. And then Kiki had the media part outside of just what the games were with Forward Into Dawn, Nightfall, and some other stuff. But you had these clear buckets and leadership roles in 343. And you have stuff flowing up and then trying to kind of cross-communicate across, I guess, kind of divisions, which in a way that should make things work more effectively and really produce a better product. But at the same time, you have that Bungie camaraderie that's so close. Everyone was in the weeds. I mean, those two styles of games are distinctly different, even though to me, Halo 5 is a great Halo game. There's still a big distinction between a Bungie Halo game and a 343 Halo game.
No, definitely. You know, the Bungie style of making a game evolved, and by Halo 3 there was a whole lot less of the Halo, you know, the hair on fire development, and then, you know, into Reach and ODST it was, you know, even more refined. You know, the one thing you do need to do is have communication between the different development teams. There has to be, you know, that communication has to be there. It doesn't, with Halo 5, the story in Halo 5, we didn't get the, what the advertising department was told they were getting, or, you know, what was going to be delivered and what actually got delivered were two different things. Hence the marketing campaign that was totally, just totally off of what the game really was. I mean, yes, there was some of that Locke versus Chief in there, but not a lot. It was not what was expected by the advertising. And, you know, that is a communication failure in the development teams. You know, they weren't telling the marketing department the right information to get them to produce ads that represented the game correctly.
Yep, there were two different experiences.
Then you go back to the Bungie era games, and, you know, up until Halo 3, there really wasn't any marketing campaign per se. I mean, they did a little bit, but, you know, Halo 3 was probably the pinnacle of their marketing campaign with the Believe series, the Landfall series, all that stuff. You know, they really dumped a lot of money into advertising Halo 3. And, you know, granted that a lot of that was the fact that Microsoft had the budget to do it, and in the previous games, they probably really didn't.
And a lot of those scenes were supposed to be for the Halo movie, which never made headway.
No.
So a lot of those scenes were just taken from what was done for that, kind of just recycled.
But it fit the story. You know, it fit Halo 3's story. You know, in the Landfall series, you know, they're tracking Chief as he re-enters the atmosphere. Why do you always have to jump?
Dang, fool. Why do you always jump? One of these days, you're going to land on something as hard as you are. Or stubborn as you are. And I'll do bits and pieces.
In the Believe campaign, it showed Chief's fight through the game. You know, it fit into the game. And yes, a lot of the props and stuff that were made for the Halo movie were all used in these ads because they were available. I mean, they'd been developed, painted, and, you know, ready to use. So the Microsoft paid for them, so they might as well use them.
And they were pretty dang good.
Mm-hmm.
Something's not right. Try again in a little.
Sorry about that. Cortana was listening too closely.
No worries. So the last part of this article, compared to the stuff that the Bungie folks talk about as far as hardships with the development and whatnot, there's not really a lot in here. And this is kind of what I was alluding to earlier at the beginning of the segment. They don't talk a lot about the issues on 343 side, which... that's kind of a, I don't know what the best word is to kind of sum this up, but it almost seems like they can't talk about the bad stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
Because you look at the Bungie folks, you look at Jamie and Marty and Peter and all the folks from the last two sections, they go into detail on why things, the stuff that people wouldn't know about behind the scenes. And a lot of the stuff that's down here at the bottom, we kind of already know about how Master Chief Collection was supposed to be this big thing, and how Halo 5 was supposed to help revamp the multiplayer, and they were thinking about someone else for the kind of one of the other main people for Halo 5, but they wanted to bring in Buck since that didn't work out. And there's a lot of stuff in here that really doesn't show the struggles behind the development of Halo from the 343 perspective.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Bungie is no longer producing Halo games.
Yeah.
343 is. So there is a image that they are encouraged to project.
It's just so night and day.
I know.
This section is so short in comparison.
You know, with Bungie, like I said, they are no longer involved in Halo. So they can talk about whatever they want and not have to worry about repercussions. These are things that, you know, they're not actively involved with anymore. So, you know, say somebody was just incompetent about, you know, the fact that you can't hit the side of a barn with a Halo 3 BR, then okay, what are they going to do about it? They're no longer involved in Halo. Where 343, and I get what you're saying, 343 is still an active developer in the Halo series. They don't want to air their dirty laundry. I do wish they would have spoke a lot more about the Master Chief Collection and about the things they did wrong with Halo 4 and the things that they did wrong with Halo 5 and what they're going to do to correct those and to reassure the public that it's not going to be there in Halo 6. But I get why they're kind of quiet about the trials and tribulations of making the sprints. You know, they talk about the difficulties of what they have to do, but they really don't get down to the nitty-gritty dirty problem.
It's just one of those things that really leads to fans of Halo not being able to trust 343. And people in the chat are making good points. A lot of these people don't work for Bungie anymore. They're not tied to obligations or whatnot, which makes sense. But at the same time, people have voiced legitimate issues with the Halo 4 campaign, the Halo 5 campaign, Nightfall, some of the other side things that 343 has done with the franchise, and none of that's in here. I mean, they're not perfect, and they're not saying there are, but they're putting a very good light out there on what they're doing as a studio, which not to discredit them.
Well, when Halo was in the Bungie camp, I didn't hear a quarter of any of the stuff that's in this article about their development. You know, right. When they were developing Halo, it was hunky-dory. Yeah, everything's going great. When they were actively developing Halo, when they screwed up Halo 2's matchmaking, it took them a while to admit they screwed up in the balancing of those weapons. And they had to release this big patch. So when they were actively developing on Halo, they were just as quiet as 343. 343's actually been a lot more vocal about what they've done wrong than Bungie ever was. And Bungie's still pretty quiet about what they've done wrong with Destiny, which is their active IP. You know, now that they're coming out with their Destiny 2, they've mentioned that they've made changes and they've addressed some of the problems that people had with the original Destiny. You know, me for one, I'm not buying it until I see it. I'm not going to give them any more money until I see that they have corrected all the problems they had with their last game. Because there was nothing that really tied me to that last game other than I had friends playing it and I wanted to play with my friends since they weren't playing Halo. You know, I get what you're saying. Everybody would love 343 to be a lot more vocal about what they've done wrong and what they intend to do to fix it. And I don't have a problem with that, but there's only so much they can really tell you. Because most of the problems that they have are above the head of 90% of the people that play the game. You know, they have no context to place this in. You know, you can say, well, we screwed up on our servers. Well, you know, someone like yourself, Dust, you're going to say, okay, well, what did you screw up? The general public, even if they said what they screwed up, wouldn't understand what they said. I'm not great with computers. I understand computers. I understand a little bit about a lot of it. But if they came out and explained to me why the Master Chief Collection was such a screw up at launch, what, you know, if they actually went into detail and said, well, we did this with the networking and it just bit us in the butt. And I'd like, okay, that means nothing to me. But I do agree that it would be nice if they would at least come out and say, hey, when we were writing the net code for the matchmaking, we screwed the pooch. We were doing everything we can to fix it. And it just, how much information is enough information? How much information is too much information? But 343 has been, it just seems to me that, not necessarily in this article, but overall, has talked a lot more about the problems than Bungie ever did.
Yeah, you're right. Thinking about it now, that does, there is a little more transparency there. And Pins was also saying there wasn't Twitter or social media really during the time that Bungie was developing Halo.
There wasn't.
So yeah, you make a valid point.
But you know, that's why I brought in the comparison to with Destiny, because Destiny and Halo, you know, 343's Halo, you know, they existed at the same time. You have Destiny where Bungie was really quiet about what they did with the game. And, you know, it wasn't until its second year that a lot of things started coming out about what they did with the original game and what happened with it. And most of it's still just rumor. Where, you know, 343, yeah, they've been a lot more vocal and saying, you know, they did finally admit that when they built the Master Chief Collection, they royally screwed up. And, you know, they've made changes to make sure something of the biblical scale of the Master Chief Collection doesn't happen again. You know, if they could, you know, if in Halo 6, if they can take the quality of the story they put in Halo 4 and have the quality of matchmaking or multiplayer that they had in Halo 5, I think they'll have a really good game. The only thing I get to say is it's the game has got the launch complete. I'm not saying they can't add things, but you've got to be where you are now when you launch the next game. And that is something I would like to see in this article more prevalent. You know, they do mention that they learned a lot about campaign with Halo 5 and that they want to, that they're going to change the way they write the campaign. I just hope they don't dumb it down too much for people, because, you know, there are a lot of people that buy the game are lore nuts, and they buy the game just for the story. They care less about multiplayer. And for the most part, that's me. You know, I buy the game for the story. The multiplayer, it's just something I have fun with my friends. But I want the story. I want that to continue.
It's a beautiful story, and it has a lot of potential, and the books are great.
You know, there's a lot of good pieces of story in Halo 5, but it didn't stretch throughout the game, you know, like it had in previous games. You know, stuff like that I would have liked to see more about in the article.
So, that's it. We've gotten through all three parts of the article. We have wrapped it up.
That is the end.
It was interesting to see the dark side of Halo development as far as Bungie stuff goes.
And yeah, it was really dark.
It just shows to go how good a team Bungie was and the miracle that Halo actually was to be the game that it is today.
This article makes it very apparent of the random luck it was that Halo became what it is.
It's truly amazing and probably a once in a lifetime thing to happen in the gaming industry. So thank you to everyone who has developed Halo. Thank you to Vice for taking the hours to put this together. I don't know how long it would have taken.
This has got to be months worth of work.
So Steve Hask, if you're somehow listening to this podcast, thank you so much for putting this together, and we would love to have you on the show to talk to you about how you pulled this thing together, because this is probably one of the best, if not the best, articles about Halo, the Halo franchise development, that I have ever seen. And granted, a lot of it's just quotes, but it's the organization of timeline from the input of the Halo developers and the influential people behind the development of Halo that put Halo in the spotlight to begin with and how it got to where it is today. It's just amazing.
Yes, it is a very amazing article, and I'm glad I don't have to read it again.
Unless you're just passing the time for whatever reason.
Yeah, no.
Oh, come on.
I have lost lost 6 hours of my life that I will never get back. You know, I've got it pinned on my favorites, and you know, I probably will use it for reference material. You know, if there's a somewhere in the future that I want to look at something, I look through this article and see if it has the answer. It's good information to have. There's a lot of things in here that are, you know, little nuggets that you're like, that you just don't get a concept of how hard it is to develop a Halo or develop a video game, period. Especially being a new company or a small company trying to build a game on a large scale.
Yeah. You said it.
But yeah, definitely my hat's off to the author and all the people that have devoted their life to Halo.
And thank you so much for making the franchise that we have the privilege of talking about every week and that we're almost at 600 episodes for. We're going to wrap it up with that said. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the shows. If you haven't checked out our last shows where we have talked about the article, then definitely go check out episodes 588 and 590 for the first two parts of this article. You can find this over at waypoint.vice.com. It is a search for Halo Away on the website, or we've been having the article linked in our podcast post on our website, which you can find at podtackler.com. So check it out if you haven't read it for yourselves. If you dare to read it, it is probably a good 6 to 8 hour read to fully get everything out of it.
And don't be surprised if you have to read some of it over and over again to understand.
Yes. If you are daring, it is worth the read, in my opinion. So a couple of final announcements before we wrap it up. For those listening live, unfortunately for those listening after the fact, this will be a little too late for you, but today is the last day that you can order your loot crate for the second year, or at least the first loot crate for the second year. It is available over at lootcrate.com/podtacular, and if you use the code podtacular at checkout, you'll get $3 off of your crate. This crate features a Cortana figure and also an assault rifle pin as the loot pin. We also have something that we got from a new product partner with Halo. It's Pixel Pals. And for those that are on the live stream, I'm going to show it up here real quick. But it is a light up pixel version of Master Chief. This is something that the product team over at 343 Industries has recently partnered up with. And it is available for pre-order now on Amazon and pixelpals.com. And it'll also be available in brick and mortar stores such as Best Buy, GameStop, Walmart, of the likes, starting September 12th. And it'll be $14.99 retail in the US. You can follow them at Real Pixel Pals on Twitter. And they also have Facebook and Instagram, which you can go follow them as well. So go check it out. Again, it's a Pixel Pals, Master Chief. It'll be available on September 12th for $15. And it lights up. This one's still in the box because GT, I'm actually going to, if you want it, whoa, and if I stop throwing it around, think about sending it to you.
Well, I don't want it now if it's broken.
But I'm going to send this to GT since he doesn't usually get all the products that I get. So I'm going to send it over to him. And we also have a couple other product things. I've got some new Mega Bloks that are in a box that I need to open. So once I dig through that, I'll have to see what new stuff they sent over. I think there's some fall line stuff in there. some ODST drop pods or whatever. So I'll pull those out next week, show those off as well. But make sure you check this out. Pixel Pals, Master Chief. It lights up too.
Woohoo!
Also, make sure you check out the podcast network. We are part of a group of gaming-specific shows such as Guardian Radio, Critcast, Podcast 76, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. You can find out more about each one of those shows over at thepodcast.com. You can check us out on our social media as well. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Discord. We also have Twitch and Mixer, which we broadcast our podcast streams and our Fraggin' Fridays, which are hosted by Godzilla T on Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. And what's the latest on the newest episode recording for Achieving Halo?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start posting in the Podtacular group record times and dates. I am actually currently doing that for this Saturday. I'll be doing some recording at, was it 7 p.m. Eastern time? Looking for two people. We'll be doing the Levels Alliance, which is one of the hub missions, and then Enemy Lines. Be getting, a couple of achievements on Enemy Lines. Let's see, Kraken Lacken and Emergency Boarding Procedures. So if you guys are interested, be sure to hit me up on Xbox Live at Godzilla Space T, and I will get you in. Excuse me. That is at 7 o'clock Eastern Time on Saturday. And let's see, what is the date on Saturday? It would be the 19th.
Nice. And that is the, I'm assuming, the Podtacular Club? Or are you talking about?
Yes, the Podtacular Club.
So if you have not joined our Xbox Club, you can also head on over to podtacular.com/Xbox. And that will take you to our club, where you can request to join. And then I think just because of how clubs work, we have to approve it or whatever. But there's no requirements, so just request it and then you'll get added to the group. And we also have our Discord and our Spartan Company, so we are still fighting our way to get the Achilles helmet. I haven't checked in a while where we're actually at, but that's still happening. It's still going. That'll wrap it up for us tonight. So thanks everyone coming along this long journey as we dive through the developmental history of Halo, mostly on the Bungie side. And we will be back next week with, not sure yet. We actually don't have anything planned for this week. It's been a while since we've actually had nothing planned on the books. There is Halo's Custom Edition CMT's SPV3 coming out on the 19th, this Saturday. And then there is the DLC, which will probably be next week, or the new leader for Halo Wars 2. And then Awakening of the Nightmare comes out in September, shortly after PAX. We'll figure out what to do in the meantime, but we'll be back here next week, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We will see you all next week. Keep on fragging them trucks.
Later.